Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hort, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Everybody Hurts edition. Coming up, the Bengals are battered and bruised heading into Sunday's game against the Chicago Bears. It looks like at least six starters are out, five on defense, and Joe Mixon on offense. Not good. Dave Lapham will join me to preview the game. We'll also hear from the great Greg Cosell from NFL Films and the NFL Matchup Show on ESPN and get his thoughts on three Bengals rookies, the previously mentioned Joe Mixon, Carl Lawson, and John Ross, who went on season-ending injured reserve this week. More on that in just a moment. And in our Fun Facts segment, we'll visit with one of the greatest Bengals of all time, who will be among the players honored at halftime this week, offensive lineman Willie Anderson. Before we get to all of that, here's a reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since the Bluetooth phone connection in your car. Having your cell phone automatically connect to the speakers in your car so that you don't have to hold the phone to your ear to carry on a conversation while driving is truly a brilliant invention. All right. I want to start this podcast with a John Ross situation. On Wednesday, the rookie wide receiver was placed on IR with an injury to his left shoulder. It's not the shoulder that was operated on before he got here. It's the other one. Apparently, it happened a few weeks ago, and Ross didn't say anything about it in hopes of playing before finally going to the medical staff this week. So here's what the ninth pick in the draft did this season. He appeared in three games for a total of 17 offensive snaps. John was targeted twice without making a catch, and the one time he carried the ball, John fumbled. The Ross situation has driven many of you crazy this year, wondering why the Bengals weren't getting him on the field. Well, it's not that big a mystery. He was injured before he got here, putting him behind the eight ball at a position where timing and repetition is vital. Then once he got the green light to practice and play with the Bengals, he hurt his knee and then his shoulder, preventing him from doing the things that made him such a highly coveted prospect. Here's hoping that John Ross is no different from last year's first-round draft pick, Will Jackson, injured as a rookie and a budding star in year two. Ross is the least of the Bengals' injury concerns this week. On defense, it looks like Vontaze Burfict, Adam Jones, Dre Kirkpatrick, Nick Vigil, and Sean Williams are definitely out, and Darquez Dennard could be out since he didn't practice on Wednesday or Thursday due to a knee injury. If Dennard can't go, you would think the Bengals would have to promote Tony McCray from the practice squad to have enough bodies at cornerback, and that could mean one of those injured players going on season-ending IR. Time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham, to discuss the Bengals' issues and this week's opponent, the scuffling Chicago Bears. Lap, short weeks are difficult to begin with in the NFL, and this week for the Cincinnati Bengals leading up to the game against the Bears on Sunday might be brutal, considering how physically and emotionally taxing Monday's loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers was.
There's no question about it, Dan. The hangover is going to be extraordinary. The worst hangover you've ever experienced on New Year's Eve is going to be nothing compared to this.
I've had some bad ones.
Yeah. I mean, and because it's not, you know, losing a football game is one thing, but how you lose a football game sometimes can lead to the serious hangover. You have a 17-point lead against the number one seed in the AFC at home on national television. Everything's looking great. And then you collapse. There's no other way to describe it. You just self-destruct and collapse. Pittsburgh ran 24 plays in the first half, and really, that field goal at the end of the first half would have been just barely over 20 snaps in the half, save for that. And then in the fourth quarter, they run 26 snaps against the Bengals. The Bengals run a mere eight. In the first encounter against Pittsburgh, the Bengals only played 1.5 quarters. They shut it down for 2.5. That was a lull. That was extraordinary. In this game, fourth quarter lull, 26 snaps to 8. And they spit the bit and lose a football game they shouldn't have lost. And so you are going to have to compartmentalize and put it aside. Easier said than done, but you can't let it linger and affect your performance against the Chicago Bears. You have to have short-term memory. That's why these guys get paid the big bucks. You have to put it aside and move on to the Bears and put your focus right there.
Lap, the Chicago Bears are coming to town this Sunday, and frankly, they're not good. They're 3-9. They've got a 5-game losing streak, and they're starting a rookie quarterback who is the second pick in this year's draft, Mitchell Trubisky. So far in his first 8 starts, he's thrown a total of 5 touchdown passes.
The thing that scares me, Dan, 2 of their 3 wins against the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens in overtime, knocked off 2 AFC North playoff contenders right now. Pittsburgh's in. Baltimore's trying to get in as a wild card, and they ran the ball down their throat, both of them. So that's what concerns me is Howard. Are they going to be able to get Jordan Howard off? Are they going to be able to control the line of scrimmage? Because the other thing that concerns me is DeCastro and Pouncey are Pro Bowlers. They're really good, the inside running game of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Kyle Long, 4-time Pro Bowler, or 3-time Pro Bowler. Josh Sitton from the Green Bay Packers they got, 4-time Pro Bowler. Cody Whitehair, I saw him play at Kansas State. He was a tackle there. They moved him to center. Really good player. They are good inside. Both their guards and their center can play. Howard can play. Bengals better get up and ready to play this football game because, again, they ran the ball down the throat of 2 AFC North solid defensive football teams, as the Cincinnati Bengals know. And they did. Man, there were cleat marks on them at the end of the football game. They ran all over them. Can't let that happen in Cincinnati.
Lap, the Bears are 3-9, largely because their offense is terrible. They're 30th in the NFL in scoring at 15.9 points a game. They are last in throwing the ball at just 160 yards a game. But their defense is good, only giving up 22 points a game. That's 14th best in the NFL.
And it all starts up front, Dan. Hicks, is playing really solid football. I think he's got like 7.5 sacks or something like that. They're big. Hicks is a big guy. He's over 330 pounds. John Jenkins is about 350, depending on what he has for pregame meal. I mean, those guys are big up front. So, you know, that's going to be the key. We know all about Pernell McPhee with the Baltimore Ravens. They signed him, gave him a big contract to go to Chicago. He's been fighting some injury, been fighting some weight issues, but we know how he can play. So it's going to be up to the offensive line to take care of business. That's the big matchup in my mind. Bengals offensive line operating against that defensive line of the Chicago Bears, because it all starts right there. They have Danny Trevathan at linebacker, good player. This football team has got some good personnel. And Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator, in my opinion, schemes as well as anybody in the National Football League to fit his personnel. So Vic Fangio will have something in store for the Cincinnati Bengals when they come to town here to match up with the Bengals. It won't be an easy Sunday. You can't think you're just going to roll your helmet out there and beat the Chicago Bears. Got to go out and earn it and make them earn everything. Don't give them anything. Don't give them any hope. Don't give them anything turnover-wise, penalty-wise. Give them nothing. Make them earn it and get yourself a win.
At least the Bengals will have safety George Iloka. At the beginning of the week, the NFL announced that Iloka and Juju Smith-Schuster of the Steelers were both getting 1-game suspensions for hits in Monday night's game at Paul Brown Stadium. But while Smith-Schuster's suspension was upheld for the cheap shot that injured Vontaze Burfict, followed by a taunting penalty, Iloka's suspension was overturned. He was fined for hitting Antonio Brown in the head, but not suspended since George was trying to prevent Brown from making a touchdown catch. Here's Carlos Dunlap on the difference between the two hits.
What Juju did was definitely over the line. What George did, I feel like he was trying to make a play. He knew a great receiver was catching the ball, and he knew the receiver would be anticipating him there, so he was trying to get the ball off him. I don't think he targeted where he ended up hitting, but you try hitting something at full speed that's doing this, you know, it's hard. Back in the day, Brian Dawkins was known for getting the ball off receivers when they made great catches, and it was acceptable. Nowadays, you know, things are a little different. I think they called that close because of how the game was going. I don't think that would be a clear-cut call every time, but the one with, with Tez involved, that's clear-cut, and that shouldn't be in football. If you run to the football and you don't see somebody, it should not be a free hit. We can't take free hits like that on defense, so why could they?
I guess the hard thing with this game is that you see guys go down and potentially it can alter a season or at least alter the next week.
Alter the season or a week? These men's lives. We had 2 guys leave on a stretcher. That shouldn't happen in a football game.
One of those players, Ryan Shazier of the Steelers, had spinal stabilization surgery on Wednesday night. Dr. Anthony Alessi, who consults with the NFL Players Association, told ESPN that although he hasn't examined Shazier, he thinks the surgery indicates a very serious injury. Dr. Alessi was quoted saying that Shazier won't play this season and might not play football again. Here's hoping that's not the case and that Shazier defies the odds. Now time to hear from one of our favorite guests, Greg Cosell from NFL Films, who's one of the best in the business at watching video and discussing the X's and O's. He recently joined Dave Lapham and me on the Bengals Game Plan show and shared his thoughts on three Bengals rookies, beginning with Joe Mixon.
I really like Mixon. I loved him coming out. I thought he was the most complete running back prospect coming out in the draft. Now, I'm going to say something that I'm sure a lot of people will think is a bold, controversial statement. To me, it's just a film study statement. I think he has a better overall running skill set than Todd Gurley. I think he's more powerful with quicker feet. I think he's got deceptive shiftiness and can find space. I think he's smoother in the hips than Gurley. I don't think that this O-line, Dave could speak to this better than I can, I don't think this O-line has played particularly well this season, but I think Mixon has a real good running skill set.
I couldn't agree with you more, particularly with, you know, the O-line struggling to establish that running game for sure. There's no question. When you look at a young pass rusher the Bengals have, they got in the fourth round out of Auburn. He's got seven and a half sacks to lead all rookies. Carl Lawson, what do you see, Greg, when you look at him, and does he remind you of anybody?
I would say his build and his size reminds me of Dwight Freeney. I'm not saying he's Dwight Freeney as we speak today.
Right.
But I think his build and his size is more along those lines because he's shorter and stumpier. He's not long and athletic. But I really like what they do in their nickel. And this is a team that's, you know, they're almost 100% nickel defense. They don't play dime. So I really like what they do in their nickel, where they put Lawson at right defensive end normally, and they put Atkins next to him at the three technique on the same side.
Yep.
They essentially play with three defensive ends. So they'll bring, you know, whether it's Johnson or Smith or, you know, whatever, but they'll play with, defensive ends and Geno Atkins. And I like that approach, and I like that Atkins and Lawson are on the same side.
Greg Cosell is our guest. John Ross has not been able to do much as a rookie, largely due to injury. He's only been in for 17 snaps so far this season. But what did you think of him coming out of Washington?
I thought he was fast. that's my profound statement for the day. No, I liked him. And again, rookie receivers, it's always hard because you can go back. Look, some guys do really well, and then guys like John Ross get ripped, and then the team gets ripped for drafting them. But you can go back through history, and there's a lot of rookie receivers who end up having very good careers who struggle as rookies. So he's not a lost cause. He's not a bust. You know, he's a smaller guy, and there's the injury factor. That's the big concern, by the way. But he's a smaller guy. He obviously can run. I thought he was not a bad route runner watching him on tape at Washington. I didn't think he was just a vertical dimension.
Right.
And I thought he was very good run after catch. So I liked him as a prospect. And this is kind of a lost year right now. We'll see what happens. But, I'd be leery to paint him as a bust after this year.
My thoughts exactly. In celebration of the Bengals' 50th season, the team has been honoring its all-time greatest players at every home game this year. And this Sunday at Paul Brown Stadium, the legends returning to town include Peter Warwick, Rudy Johnson, Corey Dillon, and Willie Anderson. Fans and media selected Big Willie as the 14th greatest player in team history prior to the season. And he talked about that and much more with Dave Lapham and yours truly. We have a great opportunity to visit with a guy who checked in at number 14 on the Bengals' first 50, the list of the top 50 retired players in franchise history. More significantly, the top right tackle in Bengals history, the great Willie Anderson.
Yes.
Willie, what was your reaction when you saw that you came in 14th on the list?
Definitely I was happy. I've been one of the guys, I think, along with Lapp and a couple of the former players that's been kind of boosting and pushing for some kind of recognition. I think the team's always invited guys back, but I think something organized and to show the whole focus points to bring fans and media guys together to kind of pick off who the top players were, I think it's a great thing for all guys. I think it's a great thing for the organization. I think it's a great thing for us nationally, too, as an organization. And more importantly, for us former guys that meant so much. You know, I was talking to Max Montoya today, and I was telling him that in 88 in Mobile, they only showed four or five games back in 88. It was the Bills, the Cowboys, Saints, and the Bengals. So I watched more Bengal games as a kid and knew about Bengal players. And but I was telling him, I said, also, I didn't know how good he and Anthony were, you know. But once I got in college, I realized, hey, man, that team that was pretty good in 88, they had the best damn line. Then once I got here, you know, what, 8 years later, I got here, you know, and was still playing with Joe Walters. And so to me, those guys mean a lot for me. A guy like Joe helped start my career out. So me, I'm always talking about the past because, you know, myself, you know, I give guys like Joe Walters a lot of credit for bringing me in the league. And so the past is always a big thing for me.
Willie, not only were you a dominant player physically, I mean, you were the most powerful offensive lineman we've ever had here, bar none. I mean, you had innate power. There's no question about it. But the thing that impressed me, with all great players, they have to have supreme football IQ. And your IQ is as good as I've ever seen in terms of not knowing what you're supposed to do, but why you're supposed to do it, what's going on around you, all that kind of stuff. Where did that all come from?
Just I've been fortunate enough to have excuse me, good coaching at every level. I know people say it all the time, but in high school, I had a very good coach, Coach Roger Dearman. Went to Auburn and had Coach Rick Trigger, who's now in Florida State, well-renowned guy. Then got ahead and got Paul. You know, I caught Paul at a young age where we both kind of grew together and learned the game of football together, learned the game of line play together. And it really taught me – Paul gave me opportunity to learn. And as I got older, coach other guys up. You know, it was my job to coach some of the guys. And I eventually coached my way out of the league. I got Stacey Andrews ready and prepared, and Stacey replaced me here. You know, so the best linemen are that way. Whitworth's that way. You know, I talked to Joe Thomas at camp with Cleveland last week. He's that way. Anthony was that way. You was that way. The great ones want to know why, and they can have a full conversation with coaches about the breakdown of a play.
You were talking about Paul Alexander, your offensive line coach, who's still here with the Bengals. He wrote a book a couple of years ago called Perform, and Paul has a wide variety of interests, including concert pianists and so forth. So in this book, he talks about Mozart being a genius, Chopin being a genius, and he refers to you as a genius for offensive line play.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I got to find that book, Paul, because I forgot about that. But that was one thing he always told me. He said, you know, he used to tell guys that I just knew how to block. I told him today, I said, I don't know why I knew how to do that. I just knew how to I knew how to do it so well that I couldn't do it wrong. A friend of mine told me the definition of a pro and an amateur is an amateur practices until he gets it right, and a pro does it so long that he can't do it wrong. Hmm. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the words I tell my guys. I told my son that. I tell the guys that I train and work with now, like, you got to do it over and over. That it's in your conscience that you can't do it wrong. You got to see blocks happening. Every other position does. The quarterbacks talk about seeing and reading the game cerebral before plays happen. Well, lineman does it do it the most. I mean, what other five guys on the field that have to take in the most information than us and relay it to each other, then go out and fight an individual battle? that's line play. So knowing how to block and being able to explain it, that's kind of why I teach it now, because I know how to explain it, because I always cared about the basis of it and why is this play being blocked this way? You know, why are we running this way? We all want to know the whole entire play, and I think Paul done a good job of that over the years, teaching his linemen to learn the why. A
couple more questions for four-time Pro Bowler Willie Anderson. I want to turn the clock back to one of the greatest performances by the offensive line in Bengals history in a specific game, and that was the day Corey Dillon ran for 278 yards on 22 carries against the Denver Broncos, a day where the passing game had three completions all day, none after the first quarter. What was it like to watch Corey do his thing as he ran by you and kept going that day?
No, think about today's passing league and how the football, every level, high school, college, even middle school football, pros, such a passing league. Can anyone play a game with nine passing yards? That's crazy, man. Like, you can't. That's crazy. So to do that, man, like, guys, we were on a different level. Then we always had a good running game. I mean, it could never be great, in my opinion, because we didn't have a passing game those early years. And you kind of felt sorry for Corey and, you know, easy guys on the line, because we stayed facing. Like, it helped us out because we learned how to block. I guarantee you, every lineman that played back then, we all know how to block an 8-man, 9-man front. Right. We can draw it up for you and show you, like, because we saw 8 and 9-man fronts every game. And that day, man, you know, it was funny. I was telling a friend of mine the other day, a friend of mine played for Shanahan in Washington. He was always talking about Shanahan had no pass. I said, yeah, man, I learned in the Pro Bowl that Shanahan hates wearing pads. And we found out the week before they played us, they hadn't been in pads in 10 weeks. They played us, and we just ran for, 300 yards rushing. The next week, they were in pass. but everything seemed to work. You know, I think the first 9 carries were for losses, I think. And it was magical watching Corey run because we ran 4 plays, literally. 16 chase and a 26 block. I blocked down and guard pull out and just run up. It was simple. I mean, it was just him finding a hole, and you get in your guy and just keep pushing and running, keep pushing and running. He makes one guy miss, and you see him just run for days and days and days and days. And it was like, this is unreal. I mean, it was an unreal experience to have that happen. Because we was in the midst of a bad season. And for you to break a record with no quarterback, it's crazy.
To me, for you to go to 4 Pro Bowls in the era that you played here in Cincinnati is a heck of an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, usually recognition for linemen, unfortunately, doesn't come until the team's winning a lot of football mm-hmm. games. So that tells me your greatness was even, you know, a cut above. Mm-hmm. How frustrating was it for you until you get that first Pro Bowl? I mean, because you didn't become a hell of a football player all of a sudden one year. I mean, you had a lot of great years that people – you just went unnoticed by people. Mm-hmm. How frustrating was that for you?
It was very frustrating. I remember 2002. My locker was on this end right here, and Tequila's at the end, other end.
Right.
And I remember when they announced it. If we both were alone, we probably would have cried. I saw it in his eyes. Because we knew at that point in time right then, your 6th, 7th year, your legacy is going to start getting affected now because I'm like, you don't have so many more years to make it. You know, and the years we thought we should have made it, we didn't make it. 2003, I had a good year 2003, and Marvin tells me I made it. I'm like, wow, like, it took me until I'm 28, 29, 30, 31, 32 years old to start making it. Oh, he's playing at a high level. No, I'm not. I may be getting worse. You know what I mean? But the public perception of us was that nobody was good, you know, and Sean Salisbury and Mark Slerick came up to Keel and I at the Pro Bowl that year and said, man, we want to apologize to you guys. I said, why? We were stretching in practice. He said, man, ESPN told us, as much as you can, make fun of the Bengals. It was a national thing. It was
wow.
What they were being told to do. He said, man, and we realized that hurt guys like you and Tequila. Mm. Because when we watch you play, you guys are all pro guys. But you're stuck on that kind of team, and when the national perception is, the only good player is Corey Dillon. You know, get Corey Dillon out of there, he'll be great. I mean, but of course, he's already great already. But that was the national perception of us to make fun. The whole Bungles thing came out. That stuff killed us. That killed us. And I just say, ask the guys who played against me. I got beat 12 times in a 13-year career. I went 3 or 4 years with no sacks. And this was during the time I would never say anything about it because I thought that wasn't lineman-like. Or team to say anything about yourself, especially when you lose, you can't say, "Hey, look at me,
right.
2-14, 3-13." But you're like, "Damn!" Like in the offseason, like, "Damn!" Like somebody look at me, like see what I'm doing. Like we're down 3 touchdowns every game, and we're passing the ball 40 times a game, and my guy can't get there. That was my pride. I'm gonna take care of my guy, and then we start to win, and we start to get more and more attention. But then you know, comes to the end. You know, you gotta stop playing, then it's over with. You know, so. That's my career, man.
It's an unfortunate thing that it took as long as it did for you to get the recognition you deserved. But we're happy that you were named the greatest right tackle in franchise history because that was definitely deserved. Congratulations on that. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Who dat?
We look forward to seeing Big Willie honored on Sunday at Paul Brown Stadium. That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe and do me a favor and give it a rating, preferably 5 stars, or leave a comment. It's always great to know how many of you are listening and just what you think. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.